News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Text line 251-343-0106. So if you want to call the show, feel free. 8:35, we'll talk with Rob Hulbert with Lanyap Mobile. We'll get to that. We've got some audio to play for you this hour. A lot of it that it is circling around the big news yesterday, number one in our three big things. President Donald Trump Wednesday said that Israel and Hamas agreed to a deal that would release all Israeli hostages held in the Gaza Strip in the first step toward peace after 2 years of war in the Palestinian territory. I'm looking at different outlets with different stories about it. Some are quite complimentary of Trump, places you wouldn't necessarily expect that. But I guess at some point you have to say, good is good. Mm. He did a good job. And some of these articles are and writers are also pointing to his kind of tireless ethic to tackle problems and try to get things done. And he may have gotten something huge done, mm-hmm. which he's done a few, but this was a big one that's been kind of dogging him since he took office with the what's going on in Gaza.
Yeah.
And it appears to be a good day.
It does. It's tough for me, though, you know, as someone who consumes the news and has seen movement towards this before. Why is this different? I mean, a lot of other folks that have been studying this closely say this is different than other times we've gotten closer to peace. I know there's a bit of a disagreement, it seems, from some about when this first stage of the ceasefire is officially supposed to take place, because some were saying that it was midnight for their local time over there. But it seems that here recently, these last couple of hours, there's still some fighting going on near Gaza City. The Israelis are saying, no, the ceasefire won't really take effect until the Israeli, I guess, parliament tonight, until they sign off on the agreement Israel's side.
Netanyahu said that he would hold a vote with his government to ratify the deal today. We'll see.
Yeah,
And
you know, the showman, as always, yesterday, Trump, pretty interesting how this came to be known, because the Secretary of State slash all the other jobs he holds, Marco Rubio, walks into the room with a note to Trump while he's holding that round table and says, hey, we need you to hop on Truth Social real quick and make this happen before the news gets out. But Trump was on Fox last night with Sean Hannity and spoke some about this. Here's what he had to say late last night.
It's a great honor to be involved in it. We had some tremendous help, as you know, with everybody from Steve Witkoff and Jerry.
It sounds like this is, again, someone recording the audio behind it. But
right.
Let's see.
Jared Kushner and Marco, and we had everybody. JD, the whole group was just amazing. And the military was, as you know, very instrumental in getting this done. We have a great military with great leadership. The whole world came together, to be honest. So many countries that you wouldn't have even thought of, and they came together. The world has come together around this deal.
So that's some from Trump last night. But as Dan was kind of laying out there, it's been interesting, the response from typically folks who will go after Trump for any and everything. Yeah. They've had a little bit of a different tune, at least here these last half a day or so.
Yeah, so among those had in my story this morning, Jeremy Dimon, if you watch CNN at all, you will have seen him for months, the correspondent live in Jerusalem, you know, doing all that you do when that place has been under siege for much of the time. And he made it very clear what he thought about what Trump had done.
This is a watershed moment. President Trump announcing that the first phase of this plan will indeed move forward, and that means the release of all of these hostages, an initial withdrawal of Israeli troops within the Gaza Strip, and ultimately what we have to think and believe based off of the president's tweet is that Hamas may have received some assurances about this actually leading to an end of the war.
Yeah, and a CNN article on it talking about all of this. The writer says simply, yet after months of false hope, stalled progress, and entrenched positions, the agreement was a clear victory for a president who has, in recent weeks, seemed intent on willing his plan into reality. he said, I would say that's a compliment that they're talking about Trump's willpower. Mm-hmm. And we were just talking about that off the air, just Trump on a daily basis. How's he do it?
Yeah.
Man.
Keeps it turned up.
Yep. He said Wednesday, talking about Trump, before announcing the deal, that he planned to travel soon to the region to see it enacted. So we will see. There are talks about Trump going to Egypt, maybe even Gaza.
Mm-hmm. And NBC News last night, Yamiche Alcindor, of course, NBC News, not exactly a bastion of conservative politics. Definitely not. But this is what Alcindor had to say last night after the announcement.
This is a major accomplishment for President Trump, something that he's been really trying to work toward. There's been a lot of critics and questioning of whether or not he could pull off sort of negotiating and working to try to get all these sides together. Of course, there were a lot of nations involved. So this is, of course, not just a victory for President Trump, but really a number of Arab nations, Hamas, and of course, Israel. But this is really huge news. And the president, of course, announcing it online.
I'd argue not a huge win for Hamas, a huge win for the people that live in Gaza, yeah, but for Hamas, I mean, the argument now from them is the disarming of Hamas. I think that'll be part of the next stage of these peace talks. This mm-hmm. first stage, it sounds like they're going to get the living hostages out yeah. as soon as Monday. The president was talking with the families of hostages last night. That was a video they posted up.
I mean, how about the fact that, so, I mean, it was last week that both Hamas and Israel agreed to Trump's 20-point plan, mm-hmm. correct? And he will now, if the plan is adopted, I mean, this is quite a statement. Trump would chair a board of peace. It's amazing. He would chair a board of peace that would oversee the interim governance of Gaza. Tony Blair would play a role in that. But again, mm-hmm. you're going to be, I mean, the world is going to have little choice but to recognize a huge piece and Donald Trump being the
leader of it.
Yeah, the impetus of all of that.
Yeah.
And his willpower alone, if things don't get derailed. But to this point, it looks very promising. And like you, you know, we can only rely on the sources and on the more informed about all of this, more intimately informed and understanding of all this. But when you see NBC and CNN falling in line, trying to, in a way, send some praise Trump's way, that tells you that the peace may be this close mm-hmm. and that Trump is getting his due.
Also, speaking of CNN, they were doing their roundtable thing last night, and Democrat from New York, Congressman Goldman, he was part of this, and it's kind of interesting. It sounds like he really doesn't want to give Trump any kind of credit for this at all, and I believe it's Abby Phillips. I can't remember.
That's her show.
She's leading it, and mm-hmm. she kind of pushes him into acknowledging the role that Trump played here.
I'd
they
like
start
to hear
by
that.
Talking about why Biden wasn't able to make any movement on something like this.
That this was not doable when President Biden was in office.
I think the biggest problem that the President Biden had is there was no pressure from Qatar, from Turkey, from Egypt. They were actually facilitating in many ways what was going on. And that is really ultimately how it all came together.
So, I mean, but I think by saying that, it's sort of an acknowledgement. Trump has changed that dynamic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think
absolutely.
That.
I mean, he's clearly.
I don't know how he, you know, and I think there's a lot that remains to learn about what prompted that change. But I do agree. Yes. Somehow, some way that changed.
Well, that's about hesitant way to say it I've ever seen. But of course, he is a Democrat congressman known for lobbing bombs.
Yeah. And they don't want to be caught on, you know, the old forever heard audio tape saying something good about Trump. So it's interesting what he failed to. Help me out, see if you think I'm on the right path here. But as I was watching all this and reading up on it and such, he talks about when Biden was there, he didn't have the support of some of the surrounding Arab nations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that was because it was Biden. But Trump took this problem on. He examined it for what it was, saw his path to try to get to a peace, and exercised some sort of pressures mm-hmm. on these. I mean,
Even, especially Netanyahu, it seems.
Netanyahu and Qatar and Iran with what he did there and Egypt, he was able to put the pressure on where they changed their stance, and suddenly the whole thing has changed. He doesn't want to give that credit to Trump, but obviously Biden out, Trump in. Now look what we have.
Yeah, and you know, he started this in the first term with the Abraham Accords that he was really pushing for. Obviously, he wants this to be part of his legacy, not just ending as many wars as he can, but also trying to bring peace to the Middle East. I mean, you talk about a huge undertaking that ranks somewhere below curing cancer, but not very many spots. I mean, several spots below that, but it's a huge and almost impossible feat. And I don't know if it'll ever come to fruition. And again, with this, I'm not even 100% confident that the ceasefire will go through. I mean, we've been burned so many times before. But I wonder, too, and like so many things, I'm stuck in the middle. Just like when I see some of the ridiculousness that comes from some of these social media circles where they are just insistent above all else that Netanyahu and really the way they phrase it, you know, Jews run the world. They're in control of everything. They're running America. I mean, just look at them. Look at us. And you step back and you go, holy, I mean, why do you, about every little single thing you think that Israel has a hand in it or that the Jewish people have a hand in it and are forcing it their way. I mean, I do believe that Netanyahu is a powerful force and is used to getting his way and he wants things his way. But remember when Trump had him call, I forget who was it in Qatar that he had to call and apologize to, and for bombing a building they were trying to hit some Hamas leadership from over there in Qatar.
Yeah.
And when Netanyahu was in D.C. last week or 2 weeks ago, Trump had him on the phone talking to, I guess, whoever the leader is in Qatar.
I don't know if it's premier or president, but he and Trump are
Crown
pretty
Prince or whatever.
Yeah, they're pretty close.
So some people took that image and said, look who's really running the country. And they make it look like, oh, Netanyahu's got the phone. He's the one making the deals. Well, Trump basically, you know, you ever screw up at home when you're a kid and your mom makes you call and ask, you know, tell him you're sorry.
Mrs. Smith, I broke your window.
It's never
going to
happen again. So Trump, I think, I believe if Netanyahu would have had his way, that Israel would have, and maybe still will, completely, you know, annex Gaza and take it all over. And that's not the way this is direction is going now with this Trump peace plan. So I think he kind of stopped Netanyahu from his overall plans. That's kind of the way I'm reading it. And I say I'm kind of stuck in the middle because you have all of these people, these conspiracy theorists who truly believe that Israel is running the United States. And you've seen it all online too, but also have an issue with, you know, it seems to me, and you see a lot of headlines, that a lot of pro-Israel people, they immediately turn to anti-Semitism for anything, and, oh, that's hate speech, it shouldn't be allowed. And I think it's just they use it a lot, even when it's not necessary. And I'm just kind of sitting down here in South Alabama going, like, you got this side that's absolutely insane that thinks the Jews run everything. And then also you've got the other side where I think that Netanyahu and Israel have taken some liberties with this opportunity opening before them here over these last couple of years. And then you also have people who completely don't even acknowledge what happened on October 7th 2 years ago, these pro-Palestine people who act like Israel just decided one day to go in and then it wasn't set off by an incredibly horrendous terrorist attack that happened across their border.
There's been so much that has happened since October the 7th. I think we were all surprised by the level of the anti-Israel sentiment that exploded in areas, especially higher education, where, you know, universities where many students in cities are Jewish that attend these universities.
Yeah.
And we saw all this going on, and I think a lot of us were surprised by the level of it and the allowability of it.
Yeah.
Where you just let it go. We've since seen the reversal on that. Trump gets in office. People are apologizing. People are paying up. But those images and that feeling from the beginning, I remember saying live on the air, how do Jewish Americans feel right now when they're watching all this? This was early on, and it, you know, 2 years ago. But there's been a reckoning of all of that. It's almost like in time, through willpower, through angles, and through negotiations, Trump has, it appears, to a high degree, succeeded in something that seemed nearly impossible.
Yeah, but it ain't over.
It ain't
until
over.
The fat lady sings, right? Until
they're singing Trump's praises in corners of the media that we've never really heard before.
Yeah. Let's get to the text when we get back from the break. 251-343-0106. I know a lot of you letting your thoughts be known this morning. We'll also talk with Rob Hulbert about a lot of the local goings-on on the way around 8:30. More Mobile Mornings on the way next.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 826. On the text line, Gardner says, will the Jewish people still vote liberal Democrat the way they, for the most part, have done? Well, the tent is widening, for sure, and there's got to be a lot of Jewish Americans who are very grateful for what Trump has done.
Yeah. We'll see, I guess, when some polling comes out. Text from Bucky Beaver says, I'm confused. Oh, Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize, and he didn't do anything, and Trump's name hasn't even been nominated. Doesn't make any sense to me. Wasn't he nominated, and then it was withdrawn a few months ago after he ended, maybe that was the Congo and Rwanda war that he said that came to an end, and then he was, like, nominated, and then it was withdrawn. I feel like I remember that.
Well, somebody this week, somebody with... I don't know if it's Ukraine. Somebody somewhere internationally of note was like saying, no, I'm going to nominate
him. Yeah. And remembering Obama winning, so that was 2009, and I don't remember. That's why I had to look it up. I mean, I knew he won, but I couldn't remember the reasoning that Nobel said he had won. Quote, for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. The Nobel Committee for Obama highlighted that he had promoted a, quote, new climate in international relations, especially seeking better dialogue between the U.S. and the Muslim world, and supported nuclear non-proliferation. I mean, if that's the standard, Trump easily passes that standard. Better dialogue between the U.S. and Muslim world. I mean, look at what's going on right now over there and this peace plan. And then supporting nuclear non-proliferation. I mean, he wiped the nuclear program basically off the map from one of the more violent actors who were trying to obtain the weapons.
And he was smart enough to watch and see what the Israel Secret Service did before all that by silencing, killing all those scientists and such. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, it's go time. And he watched what happened and then said, he kind of put it all together like, okay, if they were able to pull that off, we're going to do this. It's a bold move, but we're going to do it.
Michael says, I do believe that there will be a lasting peace in the Middle East unless either Israel is gone or every other culture in that region is gone. So maybe I do not believe there will be a lasting peace in the Middle East unless either Israel is gone or every other culture in that region is gone. That text from Michael. Rock and Roll Doctor says, I think Rubio may be working harder than Trump is. Kudos to him. Well, yeah, Rubio has four jobs and Trump just has the one, right?
Well, it was like out of a movie where Rubio interrupted Trump. I think he was talking about Antifa at the time. And then Rubio said, I got this note for you. Yeah. And he kind of wrote down pieces close or something like that.
And then, you know, Caitlin Collins, another CNN anchor, she was saying the other day, Trump just doesn't sleep. He's just working all the dang time. Butterknife says, conspiracy theories about Jews running the world. I don't think Trump supporters, which I am, need to say a thing about conspiracies. Conspiracy theories helped get Trump elected the first time and the second time, no matter how wild they were. He said the wackos helped the moderate seem more moderate. Lay out the conspiracy theories you're talking about there, Butterknife, that you think helped get Trump elected. Let me know which conspiracy theories you're discussing. And we'll talk with Rob Hulbert. How about that? On the way with Lanyap on the other side of the news.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 835 on Mobile Mornings, 251-343-0106. That line and number used exclusively for texts right now because we have a phone guest on the line.
We do. Not just any guest, but a friend. Rob Hulbert with Lanyap and Lanyap Mobile.
A cherished Friend.com
and Rob, let's start with a story. You guys have been on this from the get-go, and that was several years ago that you started reporting on the coal ash at the Barry Steam Plant. And Mobile Baykeeper, of course, has been fighting this battle for a while. It seemed like the story may go away once it made its way into the courts, but not so fast, my friend, in the words of Lee Corso. This keeps going on, and some interesting stuff from this latest court date where a lawyer for Alabama Power basically admitted that the way they're storing the coal ash there, and remember, this comes after that study just a week or two ago about the arsenic and cadmium levels. So this lawyer says, listen, we're not following federal regulations
and laws.
We're breaking
the law.
Yeah, but there's no better option. Is that kind of the way he put it out there to the judge?
Well, that's kind of been one of the ways they've tried to keep this thing going, you know, trying to justify it over the years has been, yes, I mean, they're in appellate court, at federal appellate level, the judges are asking questions about the situation. There's no question. So EPA law says that you cannot have, these companies, these power companies that have coal ash ponds, the coal ash cannot be sitting in groundwater. That is illegal. Mm-hmm. It is, they have to clean it out. That's EPA law. And Plantberry admits that there's a sitting in groundwater. And so there's really no question that the plan that they have to cap in place, which is just to drain the pond that they have and leave all the coal ash in the mud, in the water table, which of course it'll still be wet. Mm-hmm. And to leave it there, that doesn't meet EPA standards. And that's what, the EPA came back down and told ADEM that this was not an acceptable plan. Pardon me, but this is what the argument's about, and you know, essentially what they're saying though is, geez, it's going to take us such a long time to get it out of the ground. It's going to take 20 or 30 years, and you know, in the meantime, it's just going to continue to leak. And you know, it's a better plan for us just to do what we want to do, and it's going to cost $3 billion, and it's going to be, you know, all these excuses. It's really just a lot of excuses is what it is. I mean, they're not being the plan that what people want them to, or what Baykeeper wants them to do, and what I think a lot of people want them to do is to excavate it and move it to a lined facility, which is what's being done everywhere else. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the only state that is allowing, that will allow this to happen. We are the only ones. So, you know, that's the gist of it.
Hey, Rob, real quick.
Yeah.
And the EPA law that has been cited, was that in response to the disaster in Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you for sure if it came directly from that, but I think a lot of the coal ash legislation and certainly after that huge spill of coal ash that cost billions and billions to clean up and cost a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
After that, many state legislatures came in and told their utilities, you have to get this stuff out of the water table and you have to get it away from the water. And, you know, the places that, as we've pointed out 100,000 times, you know, the Southern Company owns Georgia Power and they own Alabama Power and they own Mississippi Power, and they're doing different things in different states. Alabama is the only state that we're just willing to, that our legislature is not willing to say anything about it, and they're willing to just leave all this 21 million tons of toxic stuff sitting right next to the Mobile River. It's already leaking, as the, you know, ADEM's already fined them before. This new study shows that it's leaking. Everybody knows it's leaking. It's just, they more or less admit that it is, but mm-hmm. it's just kind of, you know, it's like, well, this is the lesser of two evils is what they say. But I think a lot of it's based on claiming that it's going to take them decades to get it out of there, which it's not doing anywhere else. You know, it's not taking 30 and 40 years to get rid of coal ash in other other states.
That's the first I've heard of that argument about all the time it would take. So what's the sense in it, right? I've heard the money.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. As both a customer of Alabama Power and a resident here, you have two things you're worried about, right? And that's, of course, the environmental fallout from this, and it works its way down the waterway and, you know, into our living area here. But also, as a Alabama Power customer, you think, oh, well, great. How much is it going to cost extra on my bill for this cleanup? But correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they already, like maybe a year or two ago, kind of add in some coal ash removal costs?
It's been far longer than a year or two ago. It's been probably 5 years ago, at least. Coal ash mitigation, you've been paying for coal ash mitigation for years now. Every Alabama customer has been Alabama Power customer has been paying for this.
So what's that go towards then?
For coal ash mitigation, to do whatever it is they're going to do. What's it going to right now? You know, who knows?
Paying lawyers.
It's already there. It's already built into your power bill, which, by the way, the Public Service Commission has raised, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 times in the last 5 or 6 years. So, you know, you're paying for it already. And the concept that they're not going to collect their money back for whatever they spend is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They will. And so they already are collecting it. You know, they won't give you the number, but I mean, if you kind of start to try to work it out, it's got to be hundreds and millions of dollars already collected for coal ash mitigation.
And what's ADEM's role in this now? I know that came up in this appeals court thing, too, because the attorney for Alabama Power said, well, ADEM isn't even party to this lawsuit, and neither is the EPA. So Baykeeper's route that they're trying to take on this doesn't matter. But you think ADEM, the Alabama Department of Environmental Management, would have a little bit more of a hand in these decisions?
Well, do you remember that, like, Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop? She had that thing she put on her hand that was like a puppet, looked like a lamb.
I do.
That's what they are. That's what they are. Yeah, they're a puppet of Alabama Power. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who present the plan to EPA. EPA told them their plan doesn't work, but they are arguing in this case for the plan, even though it isn't legal. And I mean, they've already been told several times this is not a functional plan.
When you consider their vital environmental role, as it would be considered, like, this is what ADEM's all about, like, that's no small potatoes that they're just turning their back. They're over the environment, and there are states protection to abuses of the environment. So it's really kind of amazing.
They're supposed to be, I think, but they're, I don't, look, I mean, I know I probably, you know, sound like to some of your listeners, like a huge liberal environmentalist. I'm not, but I do believe in clean water. And I do think that we're already paying for this mitigation and it should take place. I mean, I don't think there's any reason for that coal ash to sit where it sits. It was put there over decades, and when these laws came down, Alabama Power continued to dump tons and tons of coal ash into the pond, knowing the deadline was coming up. So, you know, it's not like, I mean, they were warned it was coming, and they continued to make the problem bigger there. So, you know, this is just an issue, I think, that, like, you know, everybody else is doing it differently. Mm. And, you know, the lowest bar possible in Alabama is just, let's just leave it there so we don't make Alabama Power mad. And that's, I mean, we get back into the whole issue with Alabama Power of spending $20-30 million a year from their charitable foundation, sprinkling money all over the state to make different people happy, different political people happy, and that's with organizations that they're involved with. And so, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes on that is the reason people won't say anything about them, won't stand up to them.
Yeah, well, it would be very charitable to make sure that a company like that does all in their power to make sure that children don't have cancer.
Yeah, that's, I mean...
I mean, it's leaking. You know, every study. I mean, they've been fined for it. Unfortunately, ADEM won't go back out and fine them anymore. But it's, you know, they should be fined repeatedly for it. It's constantly happening, but ADEM doesn't really, you know, oh, we tested it once, it's fine. That's kind of how it is. I mean, we're just getting poor service from that, and I think Alabama Power is being a really poor corporate steward of the environment.
Another big story, we're talking with Rob Holbert with Lanyap, and latest edition is on stands now. You can read it without even leaving your bed or couch or wherever you read the news from, lanyapmobile.com. But
Lanyap's going to make this whole community completely out of shape.
That's right. Yeah. You can read it in the tub. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. You can read it while you're on your treadmill, too.
So yeah, you can. That's right.
I've tried reading on the treadmill. It just doesn't work for me. Anyway,
it's hard.
Montgomery and the shooting this past weekend, and an event, I guess, downtown Montgomery following an HBCU game. I think they had some kind of fair or something similar going on down there, too.
Right.
And you get this this shooting, not caring what's beyond their target and usually missing the target, but two dead and many, 12 injured here, and many of them younger than 20. And then you see the politicians kind of go right into their corners, right? Mayor Reed saying it's all about this new non-permit gun law, and that's really limiting what we can do. But you have conservatives, and I do have a little bit of a beef here, because as the country talks about crime in major cities, and you see the president send in National Guard to some of these more violent cities in liberal cities and liberal states. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we're in a red state, right? And even though we have some blue cities, it is a red state overall, very much a Republican legislature. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way yesterday seeing Katie Britt, or 2 days ago, talk with Attorney General Pam Bondi and say, what are you going to do about this shooting in Montgomery? I feel like as a state, we should be able to handle this a little bit more on our own. I know they tried it with the MAX unit, and it's had some success, but what do you make of this whole thing and the way this argument has turned, where basically you have a lot of Republicans in this red state saying, hey, we could use a little bit of that National Guard too?
Well, I think it is, once again, the way that things are today is that that people are now 180 from where they used to be in terms of states' rights and things like that. You know, that used to be the area where Republicans said, we're states' rights. So now we want the federal government to come down and put troops in cities where we don't like the mayor. You know, we had this almost exact same thing happen in Mobile 2 years ago. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody's calling for federal troops in Mobile. In fact, I saw Sheriff Birch the other day interviewed, and, we don't need that here, but, you know, I think maybe we need that in Montgomery. They need some things in Montgomery. But, you know, downtown, after the moon pie drop, guy shot, 10 people?
Mm-hmm. Right beside identical. Police officers, too.
Right beside police officers, much like what happened in Montgomery. They said, you know, there are cops standing right there, too. You know, the idea that this is because of permitting changes is ludicrous as
well.
Completely.
You
know, but I mean, if the answer to this crime situation is more personnel, then how about at the state level send some more money down to the states to hire more police officers, not to put National Guardsmen in who have jobs and do other things and who will have to leave eventually, but hire more police officers? Or how about even more money for judges so that we can get these people through the court system and put them in jail so that it doesn't take 3 and 4 years to go through the process? I mean, those seem to me like much more tangible solutions mm-hmm. than the concept of bringing military into cities. I that's not something that back in the old days, you know, that conservatives ever would have considered. But now, you know, the lines are being blurred all the time, and I think people think what they believe is conservative was never conservative 10 years ago.
One thing but you're at a crisis level in Montgomery I can cite one reason. Stephen Reed was elected in 2019, and I read that there were about 480 police officers on the on the force. On the force, and there's 200 less today.
Wow.
Well, that's, you know, those are issues, and they have to deal with them. But I mean, it's, you know, that again, the issue of, look, I mean, we sent federal troops in Washington because a guy who worked for Trump got beat up. We're sending federal troops all over the place because of incidents that are occurring that are, while it's crime, they're not crimes that are so different than anything that's been going on. I mean, we can't stop. I mean, if you militarize every street corner in America, then I guess you can stop all crime. But I think that's the same kind of thing they used to do in certain, you know, countries we don't want to be like. You know, it's,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think they had a lot of crime in the Soviet Union, that they had police officers and military people standing everywhere. It makes the most sense to me. If this is an issue and you really think that we need more personnel, then fund the police departments better.
Well, then that's what I'm pointing at Stephen Reid himself. He's made these decisions. And certainly the political climate changed in 2020, and we get all that, Black Lives Matter and all of that. But to reduce the police force by that many, or people just leaving the force because of the way that you administer it, I mean, that's on you.
Yeah, probably so. I don't know what the circumstance is there in terms of whether they're leaving because of pay is poor or what the circumstance is.
Or they might get killed more.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there is a crisis in this country of young men shooting each other over almost nothing and shooting everybody else around them. And that issue is not something that is unique to Montgomery, Mobile, Chicago, anywhere. It is an issue across the country. They also don't seem to have any real qualm about doing it in public or with police officers standing by. I don't know that that's going to change a tremendous amount, but I don't know how you can keep the National Guard there long enough to make that a huge difference. It may do something for a little bit.
Yeah. Just a Band-Aid, maybe on a bullet hole. Rob, good stuff as always. Latest issue on Stands Now for folks that want to sign up online. It's real easy to do and worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's only 30 cents a day to get news, and we're doing it all day long. There's lots and lots of news that is online at Lanyap Daily that is not in the paper every week. So if you're only reading the paper, which I absolutely encourage, but if you're, you know, if you want to keep up with what's going on day to day, check us out. It's not expensive, and it keeps us going and keeps you informed.
Hey, you want to be old school? There's those hideous purple boxes all over the place.
That's right. They're everywhere.
You know, we could roll them into the conversation on blight, to be honest with you.
Those are the hideous pink boxes. You're confused.
Oh, they're pink.
Oh, come on,
they're
beautiful.
These are regal purple boxes. It's the hideous pink boxes, gang. Come on. Get with it.
Thanks again, Rob. We'll talk in 1 week.
All right, later.
All right, Rob there, 251-343-0106. If you want to hop in on the text line, we'll tell you who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show next.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Morning. About to wrap this thing up. Looking forward to the Jeff Poor Show, which is on the way.
Yeah, he'll have former State Senator Dick Brubaker on in hour number one. April Marie Fogle with 1819 News joins Jeff in hour two. And then columnist Paul DeMarco at around 11:30 this morning. I did want to dive in a little bit more on the my take there on the National Guard and calls for assistance in Montgomery. I don't have so much a problem, really. I mean, it's definitely a divisive topic in my own brain about sending the military into certain cities. But when you send them into a blue state, blue city that just refused to act on crime, that's killing their citizens on the daily and making people not want to, you know, be there.
And interfering with ICE operations.
And especially that, too. I don't have so much a problem with that. But what doesn't make sense to me are the Tennessees, the Louisianas on some level, the Alabamas. And when I saw Katie Britton, I know she was just lobbing the Attorney General Bondi some softballs the other day to give her a little five-minute break from the next Democrat that was supposed to ask her questions. But when she brings up Montgomery and basically says, what are you doing about that? I'm thinking, you're the U.S. Senator for the state of Alabama. You should be asking the governor that. You should be asking the House. You should be asking this Republican legislature, how are we going to settle this problem in our backyard? You know, why? It's actually, I think it's embarrassing if you ask the president to help you. Like, take care of your own house. And for me, just to immediately turn and say, oh, I'd like some of that National Guard, too. It just seems ridiculous. You shouldn't want that. You should be able to take care of it on your own. I saw 1819 News talking about that MAX unit, you know, the Metro Area Crime Suppression or Montgomery or
everything
whatever.
They've done to supplement the lack of policing in Montgomery,
and
correct?
Yeah, and it's just a small portion of the capital right downtown, but they've spent like $2.5 million on that. And it's a lot of money, but what I looked it up, we put in the budget about $145 million budgeted for public safety in the 2026 budget. There are ways to take care of this on our own. And I'm just kind of embarrassed when I see our own state legislators or people calling for National Guard in Montgomery. It's like, aren't we in like a filibuster-proof Republican Congress, state Congress? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, as a U.S. senator, and a very popular one, in Washington and in the state of Alabama, she's not exactly like a powerless citizen, right? But maybe she's thinking she's going to use her power to go right to the top if she thinks that's either the right decision or a political winner, you know, with the citizens of Alabama. I can't read the lady's mind. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It probably was just a softball to lob towards Bondi to say that work
is doing
a crime.
Give her a break, right? Yeah.
But still, I know Ivy's talking about making some changes. I don't know. Act on our own. Let's figure out our own house here.
Dan and Dalton back in the morning beginning at 6 a.m. right here.